Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 3 of the Norton Hales Cricket Club podcast. This evening, I have been joined by somebody with a really regal background. I'm sure he will go through why it is regal. But I'm joined by Norton and Hales stalwart and probably the most jovial chap you'll ever likely to meet, Mr. Simon Belfield. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. So, Mr. Belfield, Lord Belfield, make sure I get this right. I've been involved in the club for three and a bit years. One of my first resounding memories was coming out to bats with you in my very first game, and me getting to witness the glorious Belfield late drive stroke cut strokes, exquisite Nick Knight-esque, even though you're right-handed and he's left. So,
yeah, it's a shot I've perfected over the years. Really, I think it comes with age. I'm happy to say that actually last season I didn't score a run in front of square on the offside. All my runs came through. Or there weren't many runs to be claimed there, but all my runs and all my shots were basically through the slip cordon.
Slip cordon. Yeah. Well, it's a big cordon, Norton. It's one of those things. It's not many slips catches taken there, especially down the hill. So, play to your field, that sort of stuff. Yeah, pick your fielders. So, tell me about your cricketing background. How you've not always been at Norton. When did you start?
Well, I started at school. I was privileged enough to go to Yarlett Hall, where, for those of you who know Yarlett, was run in those days by a headmaster by the name of David Carr, who was the brother of Donald Carr, of the MCC, and John Carr from Middlesex, his uncle.
Yeah.
So literally, before we ever picked up a pen at Yarlett Hall, we had to pick up a cricket bat. And I remember now standing outside the front of the school with my Duncan Fernley cricket bat, and having a lesson from Mr. Carr as to how to pick it up with the V, with the grip, and you know, every break time, it wasn't go and play in the yard. It was get on the front field and catch a load of skyers, which came down with snow on them. So it was that was the basically the background to to why I really got into cricket. But like any school like that, if you were in the football team, because obviously the football team came first, in terms of the terms. If you were in the football team, then you automatically went in the cricket team when it came to the summer. So I was a goalkeeper in the football team, believe it or not, even though I was a midget at the time.
That'll explain the wicket-keeping prowess.
And that's because I was a goalkeeper, they said, right, you can be the keeper. So at the age of 7, I was keeping wicket at Yarlett, and I didn't do anything else. They saw me bowl a little bit. They realised I couldn't throw either. So they thought, well, keeping is the place for him. So so it goes back to the age of 7. I had a couple of trials with Staffordshire from Yarlett when I was sort of 12, 13, but they didn't materialise. I think principally given my my shortness.
Your lack of physical presence in your early years.
I was a bit like Charlie. I was a real midget at that time, and that was good for being a keeper, but not great for batting. But from then, I went off to Shrewsbury, and I carried on playing cricket through Shrewsbury. Became the first 11 captain at Shrewsbury, which was a great honour and a privilege. I spent 3 years in the first 11 at Shrewsbury. Because I was a keeper, it was obviously a specialised position, so you didn't get any. So whoever was above me, there wasn't anyone for those 3 years. So I stepped in then, and I actually played a couple of games when I was in the four form, I think it was, because the keeper that was being was the keeper, the first 11 keeper, he got expelled for taking drugs. So his, you know, every cloud has a silver lining. He got
opportunity, not sure to take it.
And then even at that early age, at the age of sort of 15, I was playing first 11 cricket for Shrewsbury, and that was a real, real introduction to, you know, proper bowling and, you know, quick bowling and having to stand back to that kind of quick bowling, and, you know, glove work had to be spot on. I can't remember batting in those days, which was probably a good thing. But yeah, so that was basically my school days of playing. A week, you know, captaining the first 11 at Shrewsbury was a real privilege and real honour. Touring Barbados with the school, that was great. We had 3 weeks in Barbados. We only played 6 matches, so we'd spend a lot of time. That's when I found rum.
Was it? I've been to Barbados a few times. Was Banks Lager still?
Banks, yeah. We played on the Banks ground.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. There's a picture of me in the newspaper. Because obviously I was behind the stumps. They were trying to take a picture of their main batsman.
Mm-hmm.
They took a picture of him as he was getting out to a stumping by myself, which then hit the Barbados Times or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that picture in the loft. I wish I'd show it to Charlie every now and then.
And he's reframing and pinning up in the club, I reckon. Foreign climes with the Lord Belfield.
Yeah.
So that's your school career. What was your introduction to club cricket?
Well, yeah, club cricket was interesting. I grew up in Eccleshill, so I had a natural allegiance to Eccleshill. So I played, but I only ever played really a couple of seasons at club for Eccleshill at club level in the mid 90s. Sort of when I came back from university around that time. I never really grew up like Charlie's doing at the moment, like part of a club and what have you, or, you know, what we've got at Norton & Hales now. It was because I was away at school a lot, and in the summer, in the holidays, we always went down to Newquay in Wales and stayed in the caravan. So I probably played more cricket down in Newquay than I did it. For my club. I then, through the Stats Gents, which I know we'll come on to, I then joined Swinnerton.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a few seasons for Swinnerton as well. So it was sort of actual Swinnerton. And then when I moved to Norton & Hales in 2006, that's when I joined, obviously, Norton & Hales, you know, after a few years, because obviously having a young family at that time.
Mm. Yeah.
It wasn't easy to get a pass out for an all-day Saturday and an all-Saturday night bender.
Well, knowing you as I do, the master at gaining the green card, that was quite a very good, or have I just completely opened up a can of worms there? Because Mrs. Belfield appears to have you on a tight leash, but you manage it well.
Yeah, it's all about. I always run out of brownie points. Probably, yeah. At any given year, I run out of brownie points by the summer.
Okay.
If you do a bit of shooting, as I do, and you know, I enjoy watching Stoke City, things like that. A bit of rugby as well. Then I tend to be out of brownie points come the summer. So
yeah, it's a fairly socially led summer as well, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
We need to find out how you're going to bank some brownie points. It'll be we'll do a campaign for that. Brownie points for Bellas. That's all.
Yeah.
We'll try to get that going.
Crowdfunding.
Yeah, yeah. You do well, I think. To be fair, there's a fair few people in the club that could do with being part of that same campaign. So
yeah.
I shouldn't worry about it too much. So you mentioned that you moved to Norton in 2006, which was actually quite a crucial time for the club because. As we were talking to Darren Long last week, 2002 was a Premier League winning season. 2003, they finished third. Then, obviously, was the relegation down the divisions due to the junior setup, which obviously we'll come to later. What was your sort of experience of joining the club? I suppose at a crucial time, really.
Yeah, I sort of joined it, I suppose, a couple of years later when I think they'd been relegated.
Mm-hmm.
They'd obviously gone through the fire and they're rebuilding,
mm-hmm.
rebuilding the club. But there was a lot of people who were sort of looking down at their heels a lot, down mm-hmm. at their feet a lot. There wasn't, didn't seem to be a huge amount of impetus. There was a bit of a junior setup through mm-hmm. Rowley Taverner, who'd got his son involved, and I know that there's a team of youngsters who went through all levels,
yeah.
sort of from under 10, under 11, through to under 18.
Is that what we're talking now? Are we talking like the Cal Morgan sort of era?
I think, yeah, you've talked
about Luke and Callum Claydon.
The Taverners, the Furnival, B.O. Jack,
yeah,
Furnival, a few of the guys, the Merediths, Fergus Meredith.
Yeah.
That sort of crowd were playing the junior stuff.
Was it the Al Wells in there as well?
Yeah, I think so. Or maybe that might have been a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
That might have been a bit early before sort of the 2010-2011 period.
Yeah, yeah.
And in terms of the sort of first, I've got a feeling the second team were actually playing in the Stone League at one time. So
yeah.
I think that was a bit of an issue. There was a lot of sort of soul searching, and I think the club appeared to be in a bit of a state mm-hmm. of flux.
Yeah.
Which obviously then we went through that period of the first team were doing yourself and, mm-hmm. and Mikey coming on board. There was renewed impetus.
Mm-hmm.
We had what's his name? The pro.
Zaffer.
Yeah. Yeah. who could forget that? So he's bruised many a finger on for me. But so with Zaffer, I think mm-hmm. there was renewed impetus. But again, it was all at the top end.
Mm-hmm.
There was no. You could sense that there wasn't much underneath. You scratched the surface, and
very soft underbelly.
It was a soft, yeah. And that was, I think that was and is a concern
mm-hmm.
of the club, and that's why I think we are now committed as a club to sort of reinforcing the club side of it rather than the first 11 doing well side of it. It's all about now, I think, as I say, getting people to assist the club all the way through,
mm-hmm.
and that really starts at the bottom with the juniors.
Yeah.
And then the way you see things have been done in the past at Market Drayton and the way they've been done at War, I think the juniors is that's the bedrock of many a club.
Yeah, it's I suppose on a number of keels. And I'll go back to the conversation we had with Longy last week. Was the big thing that Norton fell foul of was they were a great team, but as a club, the structure, the infrastructure, the village is completely different now. As a village, we go back 16 years ago, and I think it's quite right, and he sort of agreed when we were talking about ensuring that the infrastructure at the club was correct.
Yeah.
We could the AGM was what, 2-3 weeks ago. It was really interesting to come out of that to notice that the main sort of agenda was galvanising and creating foundations within the club, and obviously you were obviously massively instrumental with the under-8s last year, which was obviously the first junior team we'd had in a long, long while, and obviously success is all in context, which obviously was highly successful last year. I mean, where do you feel, because the club, I think because of the way the second team were, and Ben touched on this, that since he's been involved in the club, it's the most village-based sort of second team that he's sort of ever experienced.
And the one that we had this year,
yeah.
So, I mean, for a long time, Simon, I was always ridiculed because Ben didn't live in the village. I was the only
cricketer
in the village, and some other things. But you know, a lot of my friends will say to me, well, you know, how can Northern Isles have a cricket club? And you're the only cricketer who's from Northern Isles and plays in that club. You know, what? You know, and you know, you have to explain to them that, you know, one of the other things they don't like is the fact that, you know, players get paid for playing, and you know, I know and you know that, you know, that's one of those things that it just has to happen.
It's been happening way before me and you came along. It'll be happening a long time ago.
But you know, if you've got a Northern Isles cricket club, to only have one person from the village who plays in it was very difficult. So the revelation of the last couple of years, I would say, has been the, you know, and I think it's come from the juniors, the ramping up of our junior section, and together with the increasing size in the village as well, is just to have more people from the village being involved in the cricket club. And I say involved, you don't have to play. You know, we have people who are very, you know, very happy to help behind the bar and do coffees and teas and scoring and things like that. And it's brilliant that they just have to sort of open their door in the morning and come down to the club rather than, you know, get in a car and drive from North Staffs.
I think that's the key thing. I mean, the biggest difference I've noticed over the last couple of years coming into the club is how much of a nice place it is to be. You know, when I first started, mainly because my love for the game had sort of drifted away and I was only sort of really playing out of obligation to sort of help Mike and the boys out. It was just generally this year, more so than ever, it was just a general nice buzz, obviously. And I think that's the most important thing, is it's almost become the biggest back garden in the village, is that a phrase that I'm using a lot at the minute, is that's where it should be. Everybody should be there on a Sunday.
You come down on a Friday night when the sun's out, and I think there's a picture on our website which just says it all. You know, that's a, you know, a view over Northern Isles that you can have, you know, with a pint in your hand, watching your little ones, you know, do some cricket coach, you know, be coach cricket, and that's the whole point. I grew up when Charlie and Millie were very young, we used to go to Swinnerton, and it was the same there. It was a really nice club, lovely place to spend a Friday evening. You're with your friends. You know, there's a bar open. Your kids are running out on a safe, open field. Lots of people have said to me, you know, the facility you've got here in Northern Isles is absolutely unbelievable, because you've got the park for the kids. You know, you've got tennis courts, you've got you've got all sorts of things. And I think, you know, to have that on our doorstep is absolutely fantastic. And as I say, I've had a lot of people come up to me this summer and say, wow, what a superb venue, and what a great place to spend a Friday evening, you know, on one of our club nights, and just have a beer.
I think, again, it's hard to sort of talk about the place without sounding like you're going in different directions, really, but what's really good, especially with society the way it sits now, like you were touching there, obviously you want your kid to be a cricket coach in a great outdoor setting. In the era of mobile phones, he says, talking about them, I've even got mine in my hand as I speak. Xboxes, PlayStations, that sort of stuff. It's a great social enhancement thing. I mean, you know, we'll talk, I suppose, in a moment, because your beer has run out and so is mine. We'll come to a break. When we come back from the break, part two of this podcast, we'll talk about cricket as a sort of social enhancement tool and sort of the life lessons going to learn from it, because some of the stories you tell me, and then I've got some stories myself, and I think that's the sort of
Links in very nicely with the Stats Gents stuff. That is key as well.
So. Okay, cool. Right, well, that's the end of part one. Go to the bar, it's your turn, and then we'll be back shortly. And welcome back to part two of episode three of the Norton and Hales Cricket Club podcast. If you were tuning in for part one, you'll know that I'm joined by Simon Belfield, Lord Belfield. And in this part, we're going to be talking about cricket as a whole, as a social structure, the social enhancement, and really sort of the values and life lessons that can be learnt from playing a game that, even though it's a team sport, has such a lot of individual rivalries and individual battles to overcome, both physical and mental. So just before we nipped to the bar there, Mr. Belfield, we were talking about the buzz around the club at the moment and how so many parents were commenting on what an amazing place the club is to be around. Obviously, the facilities, the vista that we have, obviously the personalities that are around the club. With, obviously, the digital age you've got at the moment with phones and different things, obviously being a parent yourself, how important do you feel sport and doing something social is important, but more importantly, cricket as a sport? What makes it so socially dynamic, I suppose?
Well, I just think being part of a team is so important for any walk of life.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at where you've got to in business and what have you, where I am now in business as well, there isn't a day that goes by in our business lives when you don't operate as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to function in a team is very important, obviously, and it gives you values and gives you skills and that sort of team spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That can set you up for life, and I think it's a key thing. When I'm in court and I come up against an opponent,
we will point out that Mr. Belfield is a lawyer. He's not in court because he's like, as you can tell from his accent, he ain't getting issued no ASBOs or anything like that. It's just he is a lawyer.
Always fancy.
Have you ever dished any of them out?
No.
Okay, not your sort of clientele.
Not my clientele.
No. Okay.
But you know, but what I was saying was that you would, I can tell from, if I've got a certain opponent, I can tell that he's never played a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
He plays golf, for example. He just looks after himself. Very self-centred. Yeah. Whereas, you know, if you're part of a team, you know that you have to rely on other people,
mm-hmm.
And that you know there's also a sense that you can't let your other team members down.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the skills that I think are very important. And cricket is the best team sport, mm-hmm. for getting those skills out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, the reason why it's the best is it also creates that, as you mentioned before, mm-hmm. there's an individual element to cricket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going out to bat with your opening partner,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that you've got 11 players, plus probably a couple of umpires in the North South League against you. That's when your chin comes out.
It's the whole 11 against two, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, try and get me out there, mm-hmm. and it gives you that gritty determination.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the reverse side, or it can completely overwhelm you,
mm-hmm.
And then you know that's something you've got to work on.
I think the big thing you're on about there is, obviously, it's a team sport, but there is that massive isolation. And one of the biggest things that I work on in my professional career is we work on the three cornerstone pillars, especially around education and personal development, of communication, teamwork and leadership. And rightly or wrongly, there's loads of bad communication in cricket, which obviously is sledging, which we'll touch on in a moment. Teamwork, which we've already mentioned, but more important, leadership. Cricket's one of those sports where you see so much in football, people blame everybody else and pointing and doing that sort of stuff because people sit back. There is no place to hide in cricket field. You have to, as a batsman, it is only you to blame.
Yeah.
You know, there's people that play for us that might blame everything else other than themselves.
Yeah.
But it is you. You've got to lead from the front. And even when you've got the ball in your hand, if you're standing under a catch, there's no place to hide. It's that individual one. It's even though it's
we've all been there, haven't we? When you've dropped a catch,
especially when the eyes are going as well. Yeah. It happens, and you do feel it for you, you know. And that's where you'll also find it in good teams. People will even, they recognise that you're isolated, and they will look, "Oh, lucky mate, come on, move on."
Yeah.
And you can learn from your mistakes, and that's kind of part and parcel of it. And there's so many different diverse situations, you know, as we know. you know, if you're in a run chasing year and you need three and over and you're winning a counter, you know, Swinnerton away needing three and over, happy days. Or you can turn up on an absolute green, absolute Bunsen burner at Norton chasing 80, and you've got, you know, if it's going to hit you in the face or break your foot, it's like, those different, adapting to different circumstances, which obviously create life, really. And obviously,
I agree with that.
You mentioned that obviously you grew up at Yarl at school, and obviously Swinnerton in clubs, things like that. One of the biggest things I've found with cricket as a whole, from a social enhancement, is it's a bit different to football and rugby, because rather than spending 90 minutes with somebody and then being quite aggressive, you spend a large proportion of your time with people who you can build long-lasting relationships. I mean, most of the people I do business with, I either play cricket with or against. Lifelong friends, even if, you know, sometimes obviously same as any aspects of life, you will lose people on the way. But I think we were talking to Longy last week, you might be playing cricket against somebody for 20 years and they become lifelong friends who you can't look for, you know, you look forward to spending a Saturday evening with, and and different things like that. It's such a socially dynamic. I think rugby's similar from that sort of thing, because
it's the ability to have a challenge on the pitch, isn't it? And have a good, good hard fought game on the pitch. But then, as soon as you cross that white line, as you come off it, that's when you shake hands, and no matter what's going on the pitch, you sit down and you have a beer afterwards with your opposition. Rugby's great for that. Cricket's very good for that. And I think that's the important part, the ability, bringing it back to the law as well, the ability to go toe-to-toe with your opponent in court and then come out afterwards and talk about where the Stoke won at the weekend and things like that. That's all part and parcel of life, you know, to do your job, but then to have a personality and friendships as well. And I think that's, cricket's great for that. And I think we all like to have a hard-fought game. And sometimes, yes, it does boil over. And so it should on occasions, because that's the nature of the nature. Jurgen Klopp last night, that 96-minute winner for Liverpool, that is sheer passion, and he's going to get in trouble for that, which is fair enough.
There's a life lesson there. You'll probably know the official stats on this. How many crimes are committed through crimes of passion? There must be a stat somewhere.
It's usually my stock defence to any
mitigating defences. And that's right. The whole reason why we play sport is to create a synthetic scenario that allows us to escape the rules and regulations of everyday life, and I spend most of my week having to be nice to people that I have zero intention of being nice to.
Yeah.
On a Saturday, if I get the chance to have a ball in my hand or hold it a piece of willow, I'm taking it. I'm taking my frustration and my anger out on that, and that's what it's there for. We have to have a release. We have to have an escape, and the structure of where it's around and the ability for that to be in there is right, but it's also a great one because there's laws and rules. If you break them, there's a consequence,
and that's
again, that's another stealth life lesson there and then. That's just how it is. You break the rules, there's a consequence, and you've got to operate within that. So we mentioned on the social scene of cricket, obviously you've been part of, and I know I've had every intention. In fact, my first introduction to Staffordshire Gents actually wasn't actually through you. It was from Pip Fitzherbert when I was 19. I was professional at Wedgwood. He would never stop ringing me for two reasons. A, he wanted me to go and pro at Swinnerton, and he wanted me to turn out for the Staffordshire Gents. But at the time, I was working insurance and getting a whimsical Wednesday afternoon off to drink port and all that sort of stuff. Wasn't really on the agenda, plus I'm 37 and I still don't think I've got this affliction to port under wraps yet. But to talk to me about, obviously from a social side, obviously there's this club, this sorority, is that the right word? The Staffordshire Gents. What's the Gents cricketing structure? Where's it come from? What's it about?
Well, there's obviously a long history of Staffordshire Gents cricket. Well over 100 years. of gentlemen's cricket, and every county has a gentleman's setup. And Staffordshire's is still going strong, actually. Mm-hmm. We've got a very good membership. We've got a good social membership rather than a playing membership.
Well, you're involved, so it's nailed on to be good socially.
But that's probably a tale of the trials and tribulations of keeping the gents cricket mm-hmm. going, because 30-40 years ago, it was very easy for farmers to get the time off to play a game on a Wednesday against the Leicester gents or the Warwickshire Imps or other gentlemen too, the Gloucester Gypsies, mm-hmm. When I first started playing Staffordshire gents cricket, again through being introduced to it by the likes of Pip Fitzherbert, mm-hmm. and Ricky Fields and Lord Stafford, there was a fixture list of 20-25 matches. We've now got 12, mm-hmm. so that tells you something about how difficult it is to get a team together. And that's because, basically, as you well know, it's very difficult to get time off mm-hmm. now. A lot of our members live in London or live in Birmingham, or they're teachers and or lawyers or what have you, and it's just become very difficult. Gone are the days where you could say, oh, I'm doing some marketing, some corporate marketing
and networking, and
you can then go and play cricket with your mates and mm-hmm. Drink a bottle of port and head home.
I've been threatening to play for 2 years and I still haven't quite mustered it, mainly because you can blame your brother because he decides to send me off to
but we are adapting places. We're adapting to those changes. We're playing more, trying to play more on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. We're trying to play more games against schools, so the likes of Denston, mm-hmm. likes of Newcastle under Lyme, the prominent schools within Staffordshire. As I say, we're just trying to make it a little bit more open, easy access. We're acutely conscious of fees and match fees mm-hmm. and things like that.
The cost of putting a game on.
We do subsidies for students and things like that. And one of my big things has been to try and make it more all-encompassing. I think a lot of people would see the StatsGen setup as being a stuffy bunch of old cronies, in their ivory towers, and it's far from that. It's all about, there's a lot of the Stone lads mm-hmm. played, a lot of the youngsters from Stone, a lot of people from Norton playing. There's a good crowd of youngsters mm-hmm. who quite frankly just want a good competitive game, mm-hmm. and that's what it is. There's good cricketers out there. I ran a StatsGen's game a couple of years ago against the Gloucester Gypsies, and we were up against two New Zealand under 19 internationals, which saw for Liner's dismissal in the first over when he was stumped down the leg side to a pacey bowler. Before he knew it, the finger was raised. He hadn't even lifted his bat.
Under 19 internationals are wasted on Liner.
It was a great moment, one that'll live it'll live for a long time in the history of Staffordshire cricket.
Well, I can't. First of all, I would want that put under trade descriptions, because anybody knows Simon Lyne, he is no gent.
This is the point. That's the point. It's not about that stuffiness mm-hmm. and about that. It's about playing good cricket, having an entertaining day, realizing that it's not all in the winning. Or it's about the competitiveness of the match, mm-hmm. But it's all about the job of the match manager for the staff gents mm-hmm. is to make it a good game, mm-hmm. not to win it or to lose it or to draw it. It's to make it a good game so everyone has a good game and has a good day, mm-hmm. and that's the essence of it.
I think, again, like if you look at the diverse, I'm quite lucky in the fact that you added me to the gents WhatsApp group, and you look at the list of names and that's from quite a diverse group. Obviously, you've got the people like Jack Davis, who obviously just gone back to Barlaston, who's, you know, Jack's just a young lad from no real privileged background, and he's involved, and he's obviously looking to do well and sort of wants to, but he'll also play fiercely competitive cricket. Mixed into that, you've also got obviously Pip Fitzherbert and like say yourself, and then like I say, there's a whole diverse range of people, and that's the thing. People have always said that cricketer is a great leveller.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you look at that from that point of view, you know, it takes one delivery to change things, and everybody's the same milk, aren't they, at that point? And I think that's the point we're trying to say about it being socially dynamic, is that sort of that.
And I think it's important to know that, you know, without those youngsters, you know, I look at the Cheadles as well, who have been stalwarts of the Staffs Gens for a long time.
Phil
and Luke.
Yeah.
Johnny played.
I mean, Johnny's an IT teacher.
So yeah, these guys are a bit, but the club understands that without those youngsters playing the 12 games, 12 fixtures, without us being able to fulfil those fixtures, there's no point to the Staffs Gents.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't fulfil those fixtures, then what's the point of having a Staffs Gents cricket club?
Yeah.
So it works both ways. Mm-hmm. And when I first made it onto the committee for the Staffs Gents, I remember doing a speech at the annual dinner, and I remember part of my speech, I looked round the room at Trenton Golf Club, and I said, if we were asked to play a game of cricket tonight, we couldn't raise a team.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have 11 able-bodied people, cricketers, in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's the problem with this club. And I think from then, that would have been 2003, 2004 time, I reckon. And I think from then, we've made great strides in terms of getting that playing membership much wider, and much more inclusive.
It's a key word, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be inclusive. You make things... If you need mass numbers, you make things exclusive, then obviously it's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? It's kind of on the way forward. So, moving forward then, obviously you mentioned, it seems to me, what you've been through with the gents is very much where we're at now as a club, really.
Yeah.
Obviously having to look at the fact that we're looking to build the infrastructure, we're looking to build the core membership, the community. Every club is a community. Without the community within the club, it's nothing. It doesn't exist. You just become a bunch of random individuals. What would you say are the main sort of cornerstones or pillars of success for a club, really? What sort of main facets and, I suppose, traits do you think every club needs?
I think it's got to have a strong committee, a committee that does things, that does what it says it's going to do. I think it's got to have I think those people then have got to look wider to see opportunities, bring in the people who can make the club bigger and better, and I say create that.
You've got to be selfish in that as well, because obviously, you know, same as anything, like kind of, I mean, having been involved in a few cricket clubs, the same as yourself, you do sometimes see people using those positions on the committee and not doing the selfless thing, the need for the greater good. It always seems to be,
that. There's politics everywhere, isn't it? And there's politics in every club I've ever been to, I've been involved with, and I think that's fine to an extent, but when it gets in the way of development, I think where we're at now, we're very fortunate in that we're at that situation of wanting and needing to develop, and there are no barriers in our way in so far as that's concerned. It's the way in which we go about developing is the key.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I've seen what's happened at Market Drayton. I think I'm a big exponent of steady and slow and steady, rather than just create something which becomes unmanageable and unwieldy, and then, you know, in a couple of years' time, regretting it and realizing that you annoy so many people. So, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you want to grasp the metal and go forward with things as quickly as you can. But I think at the same time, we've got to realize that we are not in Hales. We're not in the middle of Stoke-on-Trent or Stafford or Market Drayton. We are a little village just outside Market Drayton. We've got potential to pick up more people and more juniors as a result of what's happened at Market Drayton. We know that War have got a thriving junior section. They probably are too many juniors, so we can help there. As you know, I speak to Taff every now and again about things like that. So hopefully, I think the future is bright. I think it's the way in which we go about it is the key. And obviously getting ourselves a little bit more into the 21st century in terms of our IT and the way we do things is quite key in that. Yeah, I know you're doing a huge amount.
I think the key thing that I would look at from that, and again, I've sat at the last two AGMs and was delighted to be invited onto the committee, was there's some pretty strong leaders in the committee that we have at the minute from a diverse set of backgrounds, all in context successful in their areas of life. And I think the clear vision that the club have got at the moment, which I know the committee keep it at close quarters of their sort of their plan, their short to medium term plan, but it's good to have a vision, and it's good that everybody sat at the top table is wanting to work on that in that way and do it the right way. You know, people will always speak to and ridicule Norton because of the whole, you know, winning the Premier League back in 2002 and then obviously going down and looking at it from the wrong way around.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly, success is success. Mm. However, I think the good thing that I've noticed from everybody wanting to sort of move forward with the club is they want to do it in the right sort of way.
Yeah.
You've got the right way of doing it from that point of view, and people say, which way you're doing it. We've probably got the second lowest budget in the division in terms of player spend, which kind of definitely nips in the bud the whole Norton just pay players, that sort of stuff, which shows that we have got a core nucleus of players. I think
the most important thing from a club's perspective is it's the club rather than the first 11 getting promoted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd quite happily wish for the club to be successful as a club with juniors and with busy Friday nights and junior teams than just simply having a first 11 team that gets promoted and then gets relegated because there is no junior team. You know, it's that was a lesson for everyone. I think
as I was saying to Longy, I don't think it was something at the time that had been completely impressed, because it was only 18 months after the league had gone open, and it basically allowed that rise to prominency. And I think we were saying it was a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy in the fact that they just couldn't keep up off the field with promising. You know, we've had the whole, you know, we've been relegated back to Division 3, having finished third and missing promotion by 2 points back in 2016. So I think that was kind of, again, another short reminder that we have to make sure that we've got everything back. Otherwise, everything that we do on a Saturday and all the battle that the players go out for. And we all want sets, you know, as any sportsman, you want to play at the highest level that you possibly can.
Yeah.
You want to be able to test yourself. And I think what we'll probably see, and you look at it with clubs like Port Hill, Meakins now, they've got their infrastructure right, they've got things, and then the success comes as a byproduct of that.
Yeah.
And I think it just kind of sits in with that.
I think what we're doing now is getting that infrastructure right so that we can then, maybe in a couple, 2, 3, 4 years, we can then develop that and then have the success of the first and second 11 as well.
Well, you really look at it, if you look at it from a 6-year plan, the under eights from this year would then be our under 15s.
Yeah.
And then you're then 2-3 years away from having ready, home made, grown sort of senior cricketers. We touched on the junior section quite a bit, and obviously last year, again, it's all in context. And the under eights, the All Stars development team, which I think is a great initiative by the ECB, by the way. You mentioned obviously whatever it is that's going on at Market Drayton, which obviously is unfortunate. But if there's anybody out there who's got their little boy, little girl that wants to get involved in sport, in cricket, in coming and getting involved, what advice would you give to them if they're listening to this or they've heard somebody talk about what an amazing place the club is? What message would you send out to those people that
are thinking about it? Say come down and give it a go. I think cricket's a great, as we've said tonight, it's a great leveller, it's a great team sport on a number of levels. There's great fun between the kids. The under eights last year was just hilarious. I lost a lot of hair as a result. I've gone a lot greyer, but it was great fun. And seeing them develop over the course of that season from little children who didn't know what the point of cricket was, and then seeing them at the end knowing that winning a game meant that much, or playing well and doing things for each other, realizing their strengths and their weaknesses, and create that was unbelievable for me. It was
I think as a coach and as an educator, that's the biggie. That's the bit of the magic. That's the bit that makes it work. That's where all the grey hair.
When we started and at the beginning of the season, and I had a couple of kids come up to me and say, "Well, what's the point in running between the wickets?"
Yeah.
Then you really do start to think, oh my life, this is, we really are
off again.
We're right at the bottom of the level, and it's brilliant. Once you explain that, well, with each run you get one run, and then the more runs you get, the better it is. And by the way, don't run your partner out. Running between the wickets was a major. That was why I've lost all my hair.
It's still a lesson that bamboozles most of the people that play in our first team, so I wouldn't worry about it.
But the games we won in the under eights, the games we won were the ones where we didn't run each other out, and we lost the least amount of wickets. And it was great, and the kids got it in the end, and they. And it was just, and the other thing about having having such a great setup and having that under eights was the fact that the parents come down. The parents have been great, and we had several of the parents joining our second 11 cricket club, second 11 cricket team last year, which just means that it's such a great, as it goes to the atmosphere, it goes to the fact that we're a community, we're a village, and we've got people in the village playing cricket.
Massive turning point, really. And like say, I mentioned it in the first part, I don't think I've ever come across a village like Norton and Hales. It's like, so growing up, born in Stoke, and obviously playing cricket in and around the era of sort of Norton and Hales, never ever heard of them, sort of back in the senior B days, rushing through, obviously, to Premier League success, obviously, the playground for in around to here, it was always the joke of, you've got to go play at Norton in Wales because it's miles away, and all that sort of stuff, which it isn't. I've just driven over here. By the way, we're hosting tonight's podcast at the Hinds Head, which is the village boozer, Lord Belfield's second home. I've never been in a pub where somebody just says, stick them on my tab.
They never get paid, though.
Yeah. And the point that from the village point of view is, it is almost like a micro community and a much smaller thing. From being a town boy or a city boy, it's very much something different. It's great to see those social dynamics and everybody come together. Yes, there's characters. As you will do anywhere, and obviously they become accentuated, but it's definitely not what people expect it to be. We definitely do the best cricket teams in the league. I've never seen, remember Silverdale 2s turning up playing against us last year. and the chairman had forgotten to do tea, and all of a sudden we'd got burgers.
Got from behind.
Yeah, it was the most amazing experience ever.
I don't know, I suppose we didn't tease, I just...
I think the best quote I heard was from Richie Redmond from Silverdale, and said, "How much you tease? 400 quid.
Yeah. No, they're half price too.
That was it was interesting. I think tea went on an extra 10 minutes then, just because we couldn't get the umpires.
The game a bit of a tense match.
They were in a food coma. That was pretty cool. And then obviously, like I said, the facilities are second to none. And that's the biggest thing that I would say to any parent is, I would honestly say that Norton & Ailes is the home of cricket in North Shropshire. The facilities are better than anywhere around. The community is amazing. The people that are doing the coaching are genuine, honest people who have the best interests of your children at heart, and it is one of those things that just give it a go. And obviously we've got a whole host of winter programmes and stuff that I'm really looking to in the new year, which obviously we'll release. I know I've spoken to a contact of mine to do glow-in-the-dark cricket in January, a whole course of that, which I wouldn't mind a go at myself, never mind. Obviously, coaching the kids with the glow in the dark balls, so you can only thing you can see is the ball in the bat. That'd be quite cool.
That'd be good, yeah.
Then all the fielders are going to cope. pick your fielders. I don't know where they are. So, that'd be quite cool.
We get a lot of help from the Shropshire Cricket Board. It's probably worth pointing out as well. We've got a good relationship with them, and they assist us enormously with the junior development side.
From an affiliation like that, and obviously the cricket board are recognising the strides that we're doing. Mm. Being where we are, I'm quite sure if I went a mile that way, we'd be classed as Staffordshire. And
yes, we were right on the edge.
So how does that sort of work? Because I know there's still a bit of a rivalry. Because I reckon we could possibly be one of the only clubs floating around that in time would have Staffordshire and Shropshire representatives playing in the same club, really, just because of the natural geographical barriers.
The juniors can play if they live in Staffordshire or they're at school in Staffordshire. Uh-huh. They can play for they can go for the Staffordshire County Trials. Mm-hmm. Because we're in Shropshire, if they play for us, then they can be part of the Shropshire County setup. Obviously, Charlie's been part of that. Mm-hmm. And we'll hopefully be part of that going forward. So, we're well placed for both. If people want to use that,
two bites of the cherry, I suppose. There aren't many places you get that. I know, growing up, I've seen many a parent, and I still see it now. Like at age now, where people have got children and they kind of get frustrated because they want the child to be successful in that setup and don't quite make it, and different things like that aren't. You might argue it's political and things like that, but it's just a very good way of knowing that you've got the backing of two strong county boards that are in place. Am I right in saying we've got club mark status as well, which is I'm definitely seeing the certificate up in the clubhouse as well, which I've been involved in doing club mark previously.
Yes. Yeah,
that is no mean feat, and there's a lot of clubs that still don't have that. And what that basically reinsures is the standards and the operating practices of the club and the financial things, that sort of stuff.
People have done their safety courses and things like that. So we are well.
So
we have to have that because we did the All Stars cricket for the last two seasons. We'll hopefully do that again next year as well, and that's been the bedrock really for where we've created the junior academy from.
No, I think it's really good. I was looking at a report on that. The All Stars. There was 70. Across the region, there were 70 centres with just over 1,700 kids that signed up. And people talk about, is cricket on a forgotten sport?
No.
Those numbers are massively comparable to football.
We were one of the largest with, I think we had 22 signed up for last season, being one of the largest centres.
And what's the age group for All Stars?
5 to 8.
5 to 8. How do I get involved with that? Is there a sign-up process or just turn up on a Friday?
You go online, go on the ECB website, type in All Stars Cricket on the website and go online. I think at the moment they're looking for people to register their interest for next year.
Yeah.
And then you'll get notification of when that comes through. But up until March, April time, you can register to be part of the All-Star scheme. Norton and Hales is one of the centres, and if you're depending on where you live, you'll be referred to Norton and Hales to come down for your All-Star sessions, and they're great fun. Again, it's basically where we where the birth of the junior academy came from as a result of the ECB, and it's a great initiative. And it's not just cricket, you know, it does all the skills, you know, it's just getting kids, you know, outside running around, and it's mayhem, and that's what the
herding cats is pretty much that. And I know
that's why I drink.
I know that's not the only reason you drink. We all know
I drink more in the summer.
The key thing for me is the Friday nights that I've been down to the club, when I get the opportunity, just how many happy, smiley faces. And doesn't matter what's going on, what the level of ability is, if there's a smiley, happy face on a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old child, you can't place anything on that.
That's what it's all about.
You know, rather than throwing a PlayStation remote at something because they've lost
the
on
thing,
Fortnite.
The key thing to anything of that age is enjoyment, isn't it? If they're not enjoying it, they're not going to turn up. They're not going to do it. So even Charlie, at his age of 13, you know, I know that the key thing for him, for any given season, is making sure that he's still enjoying his cricket. Otherwise, you're up against it.
It's a long day if you're not. I've fallen foul to it, fallen out of love with the game, fallen out of love with, and it does take a lot to get it back. And and I think most of that was being around a non-progressive, enjoyable community. And I think that's the most important thing, because like I say, you do spend a lot of time on that. Okay, right. Well, that's that. We're going to come back for part three in just a moment, because I really need to nip to the little boys' room, and we'll find out some of the characters that Mr. Belfield has played against. I reckon we might have a very diverse account of this, but stay tuned, come back for part three. Welcome back for part three of episode three of the Norton and Hales Cricket Club podcast. I'm joined by Simon Belfield, Norton and Hales stalwart. Now, quick fire questions. Okay, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
You put your dry roasted peanuts down. Don't shirk these questions, because the first 2 weeks, both Ben and Longy, two of the most outspoken people you will ever look to meet, have dodged them. They're like Turner to Trevor Brooking overnight, sat on the fence. Best overseas professional you've ever played against?
Overseas professional I've ever played against?
Yeah. And don't do a Ben and go, give me a name and then clam up. I want to know who and why.
I don't know if I've played against Zaffa. I don't know if I played with him.
Well, you can give me Zaffa as who you played with. I want to know who you've gone against.
Who I played against?
Come on, you played at Swinnerton, Norton.
Best overseas player I've ever played against.
And then the gents as well, you must have come across some names.
Probably those couple of bloody New Zealanders in that Gloucester Gypsies match.
I've got a name for you.
But I was trying to think of who the Eccleshall pro was for a couple of years. Nathan Hinton. He was a good pro for Eccleshall.
I've got a name for you. Jalat Khan.
Jalat at Roe Park. Yeah, he tied me up in knots a couple of occasions. Yeah, on the two occasions I played against him.
A couple of times and over.
A couple of times I played against him for the over that I lasted. That's probably a good shout.
What makes it so difficult? Because obviously we play cricket, we want to play at the highest level. Is it so much the person you're playing against, or is the aura, or is there something different about playing against an overseas professional? Does your mindset change? In your own eyes, what's the thoughts?
I don't think so. No, I just think, they're obviously skilled at what they do. From a personal perspective, I rarely know whether they're overseas professionals or not. I just turn up and play. Maybe I should do a little bit more.
The port-filled glasses.
Yeah, I'm still struggling to understand why they can't have a beer before the game kind of mentality. But yeah, I mean, they're obviously skilled at what they do. You know, they you know, useful cricketers in their own right. They've got, you know, and the likes of Jallet, the likes of Zafa, you know, they've got, you know, a lot of history behind them, a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So they know the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that experience as well. You know when you've got a batsman tied up in your left arm spin bowler, and you just know
that he's not going to give you any quarter inch.
Yeah, and that my only shot, being a cut shot, isn't brilliant against that kind of bowler.
I remember playing against Jallet at Norton, and I remember putting him in the house. I'll openly admit, down on one knee, one eye open, slog sweep, didn't really go where I wanted to. I was supposed to go over mid wicket, but it went more cow into the house where you never get the balls back.
Oh, yes.
And I swear to God, I didn't see the next delivery.
Yeah.
Just middle stump run, arm ball out of nowhere. And it was at least five times wicking the ball before, and obviously he's gone on to.
That'll learn you.
talk about learning. He's a very, very quick leveller. You got the boys stood to the left shouting, short, next one. But obviously he's gone on to obviously have a very successful campaign in the Premier League with Blythe. Obviously recognised the talent. And Blythe needs to thank Mikey Dyer by that week, I believe. Mikey was the scout for that one. He got asked.
Oh, did he?
He was the best left arm spinner. Mikey kind of did that. So he has got his uses in some areas. I think I know the answer to this one, because you've already pretty much alluded to it.
Who's
best
that?
Overseas you've ever played with?
Well, see, Zaffa's up there. I also had the privilege at Swinnerton of playing with Reggie, who went to
Mo Hussein.
He went to. He's based at Audlem, isn't he? Reg, used to call him.
Then
he was at Whitmore. He does training at coaching at Whitmore, doesn't he? He was a great, great club pro. Who did a lot with the juniors at Swinnerton. But that's why I like Zaffa.
You know about Raj Kumar?
Raj Kumar, Because
he's out now. We're not talking about Raj, because we can't talk about the league, because I think the league do a great job. Raj is kind of, he had a bit of a nightmare season last year, and obviously it's caused
a bit of uproar
at Southwark.
But as I say, at the time when I was at Swinnerton, playing with him was fantastic, and that was then, it followed on when I played at Norton with Zaff.
You kept wickets at Zaff, and Norton's not the easiest place to keep wickets.
No.
What was the sort of the main? Because one thing that Zaff has always had the ability to do is slip it up three or four notches at will.
Yeah, I always used to say he just bowled a really heavy ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's
not easy at Norton.
Some bowlers can be as quick as Zaff, but it used to come into the glove. He used to come to the glove really sort of naturally, and
mm-hmm.
whereas Zaff used to just be, heavy.
Yeah.
And he used to hurt the fingers, especially on a cold day. And if you ever dropped a catch off him, then God help you, because he was fairly he was very unforgiving. But at the same time, like I've said before. Yeah, as soon as you cross that white line, walking off the pitch, he was a proper gent. He was great for the club. Juniors love him.
Yeah,
my lad still talks of the days when Zaff was teaching him how to play forward defence, which not even Zaff can play.
I don't think he's going to be shot. I think Zaff missed page 1-9 of the ECB coaching manual, because trust me, you can hit a 12, but I don't think the cover drive, square cut, the hook shot, poor defence, that definitely isn't in his vocabulary.
So yeah, definitely.
Okay, best club cricketer you played against? Yeah, so look, don't have to be local, just good, solid club cricketer.
I obviously put with allegiance.
Don't you dare do a Ben Furnival on me.
I think Pip Fitzherbert, Swinnerton. Okay. I think he just epitomises how the game should be played. He was tough. He got banned a few times.
Mm-hmm.
He wore his heart on his sleeve. But as I keep saying, as soon as you cross that white line, on the boundary, then it's straight in the bar. Let's have some beers and let's talk about the game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what I think a club cricketer should be.
You talk about characters in the game. He's one of the most influential characters that's had an effect on my cricketing career. Being a boy that got dragged up on Blurton, and playing against him when I was 18, praying for Wedgwood. There's different types of education you get given in life, and he and his brother, to be fair, gave me a bit of an education in it's not what you say, it's how you say it and when.
Yeah.
When is the right time to say it, and I think on those times cricket was a great leveller. I fully agree with that one. Okay, most controversial. We've changed the questions up because everybody keeps dodging them. The one cricketer you don't want to see when you turn up on a Saturday. A one character. For a variety of different reasons.
Your brother, when he's had a few?
Which one?
I reckon Mikey Dyer. I reckon he could be an absolute animal if you got on the wrong side of
Thor. He's
I think
for somebody who doesn't say much when he hasn't had a beer,
I've seen I just
get two strongbows down him. He's whereas I used to think I was animated, but his string gets longer for that cloud he tugs around with him. And if he goes off, he's like he can't. Mikey's fiercely competitive, and in fact,
but massively, as you say, massively competitive.
The worst, and
the way you just said, look, bring it on. I can drop him, that kind of thing. I'm thinking, that could be messy.
He just makes you laugh because, I know when he's ticking. It's because he doesn't say much anyway, but when he goes deadly silent, that's the time to leave him alone.
Yeah.
It was one
usually
of the,
after I've dropped a catch.
It was funny. We played Stafford away in the rain. Horrendous. We got 300 and something, and they were 270 for 9, I think. And Mike couldn't see because he got his glasses on. It was raining. He missed the ball. And at Stafford, all the hockey matches had finished, the football had finished. And there must have been a crowd of 200 people. Yeah. I've never ever seen 300 people stop talking because he picked the ball up, dried it, and just walked over and went, whoever's just said that, step forward, I'm going to mob you up. And literally,
I can imagine him doing
it. All 300 people just went.
Yeah.
I get that one.
I can see
okay,
that, yeah.
Cool. Okay, so coming to the end of the podcast, what's your vision for the season ahead? What key things would you like to see over the winter? I'm going to hold you to account now while I've got you. I believe that you've signed up for my winter challenge of doing the Three Peaks.
Three Peaks.
Is that a Belfield family day out? I believe
it might be. Yeah, we might bring a picnic.
Port.
Charlie's keen.
Port is good for gout.
Port is good for the gout. That might get me up the second mountain. I don't know how we'll do the third one, but
it's in the dark, so just think you're walking flat.
No, looking forward to that. Obviously, then it's just about developing the junior academy, getting names down on paper. Creating a winter training program.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting some coaches. Getting their level 2 qualifications sorted out. That will be in February, March time.
Yeah.
And then just developing as we go, registering for the All Stars program. I've notified the league that we'll be entering an under 8s and an under 10s development team. So that's all been done, and it's just a question of just keeping the club, keeping it going, and getting the juniors to participate, get their parents involved, and just getting, as you said, as we said before, it's about getting the basics right, and getting that bedrock that we can then, or that platform that we can then move from. Solid platform.
I fully agree. Thank you very much for tuning in to episode 3. Please if you're liking what it is to do, please share. If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram, Facebook. Just spread the joy of what it is that we're trying to do. Yes, we have the Tractor Boys mentality, but we're far from a village club. And a new slogan, and until anybody tells me I can't use it, I'm going to continue to use it. Exceptional village, exceptional standards, and that's what we're trying to promote from within. And like I say, join the hype. Thank you very much for listening, and we will speak to you next week. Thank you very much, Mr. Belfield.
Thank you.